Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Defense Chief James Mattis echoing the warnings from President Trump says North Korea can expect a massive military response if it threatens the U.S., Guam, or American allies.
We are not looking to the total annihilation of a country, namely North Korea. But as I said, we have many options to do so.
North Korea prompted the response after holding the 6 nuclear tests there, this time using what Pyongyang described as a hydrogen bomb. We asked security expert Jamil Jaffer whether it actually was a hydrogen device.
Either way, it's a very big deal. Obviously, it's 6 nuclear tests, the second in about a year, and, you know, concerning because of the size of the weapon. If it is a hydrogen bomb, that represents a significant change in North Korean capability because it shows their ability to do a two-stage nuclear weapon. Essentially means you can get a lot more explosive power out of the same size weapon.
In response, South Korea is conducting military drills and the UN Security Council has called for an emergency session. Cambodian opposition leader Kem Sokha has been arrested on an espionage charge, accused of conspiring with a foreign power to harm the country. Cambodia has been in the midst of a sweeping crackdown on free speech. Dozens of radio stations and an independent newspaper shut down. Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga says his coalition would not share power 2 days after the Supreme Court annulled the presidential election, citing irregularities. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta, who won last month's polling against Odinga, said his party would not share power either. Voting has to take place within 60 days. This is VOA News. An Iranian appeals court has upheld a 10-year jail term against a U.S. citizen, 2 Iranian Americans, and a U.S. resident from Lebanon who earlier had been convicted on spying charges. Indiana University analyst Hussein Banai says this is a victory for hardliners in Iran who have a twofold purpose.
Leverage their differences with the United States, especially as Washington ratchets up its talk against the terms of the nuclear deals or Iran's violations of the terms of the nuclear deals. This is one way to put more bargaining chips on the table by the hardline judiciary.
And Banai said it's designed to keep the government of President Hassan Rouhani and its relations with the West in check. The U.S. has called on Iran to release all Americans and other foreigners detained on fabricated national security charges. Sunday was a day of prayer in the U.S. state of Texas following the devastation wrought a week earlier by Hurricane Harvey, came ashore August 25th, leaving more than 40 dead, tens of thousands homeless. Congress considering initial funding at nearly $8 billion, but Texas Governor Greg Abbott has said the price tag will likely exceed that of any powerful storm, such as Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
Katrina cost, if I recall, more than $120 billion. When you look at the number of homes and businesses affected by this, I think this will cost well over $120 billion, probably $150 to $180 billion.
And flooding remains a problem there, some rivers still at dangerous levels. British Secretary of State and Chief Brexit Negotiator David Davis says he's upbeat about Britain's withdrawal from the EU and the country's prospects outside of the bloc. He addressed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Washington just after holding talks with officials in Brussels, where the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, gave a negative assessment of the negotiations, saying there had been no decisive progress on key issues.
When I spoke to my European counterpart, Michel Barnier, I said to him once, the pessimist sees difficulty in every opportunity. The optimist sees opportunity in every difficulty. And as ever on that front, I am a determined optimist in this. We will get to those opportunities. Because fundamentally, I believe that a good deal is in the interests of both the United Kingdom and the European Union and of the entire global community.
Davis also said post-Brexit Britain would not be engaging in any regulatory race to the bottom to try to match many countries, which he says pay their workers far lower wages than those in Britain, the U.S., and other allies in the business world. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, September the 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga says that his opposition coalition does not plan to share power. Meanwhile, the Kenyan president Uhuru Kenyatta is being criticized for allegedly insulting justices of the Supreme Court after the decision to annul the elections.
Kenyans are not very happy with the president and the manner in which he has attacked the judges, calling them wakoras. Wakoras means dishonest people and corrupt people.
James Mwamu is a Kenyan lawyer and political analyst. Al-Shabaab militants carried out a suicide car bombing on a Somali military base, killing at least 7 soldiers north of the main city of Kismayo. And Malawi government has banned transportation of livestock following the outbreak of foot and mouth disease, which has attacked livestock in southern Malawi.
The first case was noted on the 24th of August, but we are already on the ground as government to ensure that we institute all the necessary measures and contain this disease as soon as possible.
Patrick Chikungwa is the director in the Department of Livestock and Animal Health in Malawi's Ministry of Agriculture. And the new magazine out in Nigeria is bending gender and fashion stereotypes. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga says that his coalition will not share power 2 days after the Supreme Court annulled presidential election results. Mr. Odinga, who was speaking at a church service in Nairobi, said that his party would not share power with quote-unquote thieves. Mr. Odinga's remarks came following the incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta, who a day earlier said that his Jubilee party would not share power with the opposition. Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the results of the election due to what it said were irregularities and illegalities committed by the Electoral Board during the vote. The court judges said that these actions harmed the integrity of the election. A fresh round of elections must be held within 60 days. Meanwhile, the Kenyan president Uhuru Kenyatta is coming under criticisms for allegedly insulting justices of the Supreme Court. Speaking to his supporters after the court's ruling, Kenyatta slammed the judges as court crooks. His comments followed weeks of advising the opposition to seek legal redress and arguing them to use whatever legal mechanisms created by what he says is the country's wonderful constitution. And for reaction regarding the president's disagreement with the court's decision, VOA reporter Peter Cloti reached Mr. James Mwamu, a Kenyan attorney and political analyst in the capital, Nairobi.
A number of people are not very happy about the reaction of President Uhuru Kenyatta, because you remember after the outcome of the presidential elections on the 8th of August, the president himself asked the opposition to go to court, because that is the only constitutionally available means of challenging a presidential election. And you know, when you go to court, you either expect to win or lose. And so you must have expected that he was either going to win or lose the election. The Supreme Court returned a verdict on a majority of 4-2 and said that elections were not in accordance with the Constitution. So Kenyans are wondering then what has changed, because both the court and the executive withdrew the powers that they use from the same Constitution. So Kenyans are not very happy with the president and the manner in which he has attacked the judges, calling them wakoras. Wakoras means dishonest people and corrupt people.
I heard reports that a Kenya Law Society has condemned the president's accusation and said that his pronouncement undermines the integrity of the judiciary in Kenya. Do you share in that assessment?
Yes, I think I support that statement, because one, this hearing is a hearing that took on for 4 days. There was evidence, there were reports by independent experts who verified the servers of the IBC, and therefore I share that statement of the Law Society that the attack on the judiciary are most unfortunate. And coming from a president whose elections were upheld in 2013 by the same Supreme Court, it will be very unfortunate for him now that the shoe is on the other foot. Now he will turn and complain and attack the judiciary.
Some supporters of the NASA coalition are saying they don't have trust in Wafula Chibukati and his team at the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, and I've called them to resign or for a new group to administer the elections.
You know, the Supreme Court ruling was very clear that there were acts of illegalities and irregularities committed by the Electoral Commission. And the chairman of the Electoral Commission himself has called for investigation into the one members of staff. What I think that should happen is that the opposition should allow the DPP and the other investigation organ to investigate these people and find out who are culpable for this particular problem. I see where Martha is coming from, but if these are the people who bungled the elections and the issues of illegality, the entry into the ID cover by third parties was actually glaring in the extract report, they will be therefore be saying that, look, how can we have the same thing, who bungled the same thing conducted this particular election? If the commission doesn't carry out those elections against this today, it will be in a serious constitutional crisis.
James Mwamu is a Kenyan lawyer and political analyst. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. In Somalia, the Al-Shabaab militants carried out a suicide car bombing on a Somali military base, killing at least 7 soldiers in the town of Bologududu, a town north of the main city of Kismayo. Regional officials told VOA that militants detonated 2 suicide car bombs at a military checkpoint before heavily armed militants attacked the base early Sunday. A spokesman for the Jubaland Regional Administration, Abdunasir Serar, told VOA Somali Service that more than 10 other soldiers were wounded in the dawn attack. The Al-Shabaab militant group claimed that it killed 26 government troops and seized military vehicles and weapons. Officials say that the fighting in the area lasted 2 hours after reinforcements coming in from the town of Kismayo were ambushed by the militants. And in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, insecurity has increased for the last few weeks as 2 people were killed by unknown armed group last week. Opposition leaders have called on the government to engage in an inclusive dialogue to put an end to the current crisis. From Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, reporter Moses Havyarimana has this story.
This is a local bar in Buyenzi located in Bujumbura neighborhood, where 2 weeks ago 3 people were killed and 29 were injured in a grenade attack. Several grenade attacks were made on the local bars in Bujumbura, leaving at least more than 15 people getting killed in the last 3 months. I revisited the bar where the attack killed 3 people. Manirakiza Mariko is a 48-year-old man who frequents this bar.
We sit here until around 7 p.m., then we close and leave the place. That's how we were told by the police. We can't stay longer as we used to do in the past because of what happened recently. I lost 2 friends in the last grenade attacks, and people say we should leave this place, but we can't.
Besides the grenade attacks that have been frequently reported in the country, dead bodies are found in the countryside, left on the streets, raising concerns on the country's growing insecurity for the last 3 months. Last week, 2 people were killed by unknown armed group in Ngozi and Ruyigi province, respectively. Government officials have also been targeted by the unknown armed men, which the authority called criminals. Pierre Nkurikiye, the Burundi police spokesman, downplayed the attacks to be politically motivated.
Police is still undergoing with the police investigation in order to arrest these criminals and to bring them to justice. Now we can't precise what could be behind of these attacks. We still wait the end of the investigations, but you know, in many cases of grenade attacks in all the country, the perpetrators have been arrested.
Violence in Burundi erupted in 2015 after the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a third term in the office. Opposition members in the country say that the president's move was unconstitutional. Former Burundi President Domitien Ndayizeye called on the Burundi government to engage in an inclusive dialogue to restore peace and stability in the country.
the international community has tried to advise our president and the current the party leading Burundi today to listen to the other political parties and to implement the Arusha agreement, but they didn't like. So now in Burundi we have a very big crisis.
As the regional mediated dialogue is set to resume this month in efforts to put an end to the political crisis that have rocked the country for 2 years now, the government is still reluctant to talk to the opposition members it accuses of plotting the failed coup in 2015. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The head of Uganda's Communication Commission, or UCC, says that the SIM card registration exercise in the country was greatly successful. Mr. Godfrey Mutavazi, the executive director of UCC, says that at least 98% of mobile users in the country had their SIM cards registered. But some Ugandans say that they are disgruntled as to why the process was slow and inefficient. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
The Uganda Communications Commission made a directive to all telecoms in Uganda to switch off non-registered and verified SIM cards this past Friday. Mutabaz says the process will help boost security in the country.
The SIM card has got a record. It gives us a stamp. We know who you are. You register with the ID. The ID has got your bios. It has got your photo. If you have got biometrics and you've got your photograph, you've got everything, and you are committing crime over the same platform, then you can be identified.
Kampala resident Vicky Basirika welcomed the exercise but says citizens were not granted enough time to register their SIM cards.
The exercise is not really bad, but then people were not given enough time to register their SIM cards. Giving people 3 months, 2 months, it's not really enough to register every Ugandan in the country.
But Mutabazi refutes these claims.
This exercise has been going on now. It's kind of about to... If I recollect, call it 5 years now. We've been postponing. And if the Ugandan hasn't heard about this message, surely, then it will be a shock.
Another Kampala resident, Sharon Asinde, says she was disappointed when her phone was disconnected on Friday morning, although she had submitted her names for registration.
It was showing my names, implying that I had registered for them. But so... repeating the whole process was all nagging. I just wanted to get Kenyan SIM cards, Safaricom, and give up on the MTN Uganda, Sijui Airtel. Yeah.
Asinde, a businesswoman, says she missed out on some important business opportunities because she wasn't able to communicate with her clients. Harper Rogers says he was subjected to multiple registration for the same SIM card.
We first registered our SIM cards and we thought everything was okay, everything was done. So I don't know how the second updating or second registration came in by NIRA. It was an inconveniencing exercise.
The deadline for registration of SIM cards had been postponed on several occasions. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
On to West Africa in Nigeria. A Nasty Boy is a new magazine out that is bending gender and fashion stereotypes. One feature of their site now highlights men in the country who wear dresses. Founder and editorial director Richard Akuson says that he wants to expand the definition of what it means to be Nigerian. He tells Ricky Shryok that he started the magazine based on he and his friends' personal experiences defying norms.
Especially for a country like Nigeria, where difference is not really appreciated. Only because when you stick out, then, I mean, it's always like a sore thumb. So in that sense, Nigeria is not the best place, you know, that encourages individualism.
When you say being different, do you mean the way you dress, the way you act? Can you be more specific?
Well, I mean, difference could be the way you think, could be really the way you dress and then look, and then act as well. And sometimes there are things that you can't really necessarily control. Like for myself, I was a little feminine growing up. And so I had my quirks, and then those really made me stand out in the most negative way imaginable. So, I mean, in my own experience, that was how different I was.
Because you focused on these things that created problems for you in your life personally, or people criticized personally, what has been the reaction in the general public to the magazine?
I mean, back here, it's been a very mixed reaction, but I've tried to really focus on positive. We get a lot of emails from people who, you know, completely do not understand and do not even want to see reasons for a nasty boy. But I knew to expect that only because I've been in the public eye. I was at a very popular publication and then sort of caught a controversy in some ways, as they always put it, only because I always had a point of view and I always stood by them and I always thought that inclusion, diversity and equality should matter. We've been getting a tremendous amount of positive response, which is good. And as it was going into a community, and as it was, people are beginning to believe and people are beginning to see why it's necessary, which is good, because what is most important to us is not obviously causing controversy, but that we are able to, in that sense, we are able to spring up, to encourage conversation. We're able to, through a Nasty Boy, our readers are able to become more open-minded, to become more accepting rather than tolerance, which is the word that is mostly used around here. Because I believe that tolerance can only go so far, but with acceptance, you really do not need to even understand. You just completely love a person, in spite of their flaws, their perfections and whatever. But, many times I've been asked what I would like to see Nasty Boy achieve. But, and I always say that I really do not think it's possible right now to even influence policy in any way, only because we really do not even have that clout, political clout. But I believe that there can be a change in our readers, in the people that come every day to our Instagram page or our website or Twitter page, you know, or Facebook or even YouTube. You know, and then that is what is most important to me, that they leave, you know, feeling the need to be more accepting, the need to, you know, expand the definition of what it means to be Nigeria.
That was Richard Akusun, founder and editorial director of A Nasty Boy magazine. He was speaking to reporter Ricky Shryok from Lagos. And in Malawi, the government has banned transportation of livestock following the outbreak of foot and mouth disease, which has attacked livestock in southern Malawi. But livestock traders have dismissed the outbreak as a mere rumor, and to them, business remains as usual. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Veterinary experts' recent findings show that about 30 animals in 80 kras were affected in southern districts of Chikwawa and Nsanje, which supply most of the beef and dairy products in Malawi. Patrick Chikungwa is the director for Department of Livestock and Animal Health in the Ministry of Agriculture.
The first case was noted on the 24th of August, but we are already on the ground as government to ensure that we institute all the necessary measures and contain this disease as soon as possible.
Chikungwa says over 10,000 cattle were at risk of contracting the disease. He says investigations are still ongoing to establish the magnitude of outbreak. Foot and mouth disease is a highly contagious viral disease that mostly affects cattle. Though there is no known human form of the disease, veterinary experts say animals affected by the disease cannot produce milk and cannot work because of sores that attack joints and feet of the animals. Livestock traders in the affected areas say there is no outbreak of the disease in their area and that government is acting on rumors. Abida Stikmia runs a cattle ranch in Chikwawa district. She also runs S&A Cold Storage, one of top meat distributors in Blanta.
Seriously, there's no outbreak. It's not true. I'm telling you, there's nothing. We're loading. There's nothing. They suspected. Then there's nothing. Business as usual.
But Chikungwa says government has deployed veterinary experts in the affected areas, executing several measures to control the spread of the disease,
including the restriction of livestock movement products, instituting the ban on all markets, including livestock slaughters.
He says the ban on cattle movement might take 2 to 6 months, depending on how fast veterinary authorities contain the disease. Malawi has also banned the importation of poultry and poultry products from Zimbabwe, Democratic Republic of Congo, and South Africa following the outbreak of bird flu in these countries. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Planta.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here's Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria, with this morning's roundup of Africa Sports. Good morning, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jackson. We begin with Africa's 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign, which continues later today after the weekend's round of matches. The Super Eagles appear best placed to qualify for next summer's showpiece and will confirm their presence with victory over Cameroon in Yaounde later this evening after their 4-0 thrashing of the African champions on Friday in Uyo. Super Eagles coach Gernot Rau says Nigeria intends to clinch the only spot of the group when they play Cameroon in Yaounde.
We don't forget that it's not finished yet because we have only 9 points. We need at least 11, I think. So let's take another one or two, or 3-1 if it's possible. I'm happy because we promised to our goalkeeper, Karl Ikpeme, to do it for him. And we did it for him.
Captain of the Super Eagles, John Obi Mikel, is confident that they will win Cameroon in Yaounde.
I will do my best. I will carry this team, same like I did in the Olympics. I want to make sure we go to the World Cup, also qualify for the Nations Cup.
Tunisia, who have also won all three of their opening fixtures, are in a less promising position than the Super Eagles, despite beating nearest rivals, the Democratic Republic of Congo 2-1 in raids on Saturday. DR Congo will host the Carthage Eagles at the Stade de Matara Stadium on Tuesday. In Group D, it appears is the tightest of the 5 pools, where all 4 teams are separated by just 2 points. Group heavyweights Senegal and South Africa ought to have taken the opportunity to consolidate the top spot in match day 3, but both conspired to drop points. Senegal were held at home by Burkina Faso, and South Africa lost after a 2-1 come-from-behind victory by previously pointless Cape Verde. Bafana coach Stuart Baxter is still confident that his players will get the positive result they need at the Moses Mabhida Stadium when they host Cape Verde in Durban in the reverse fixture.
We didn't play well for the second half of the first half. The second half, we did what we could do. We played, we tried to play more, we tried to have more patience and more composure, and even when we were down to 10 men, we still created chances. So I was disappointed that we didn't get the result, but I'm looking for reasons, not excuses.
Elsewhere, Uganda interim coach Moses Basena is confident that his team will be able to perform bravely in their second leg match against Egypt in the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers.
What is important is that we should be able to stomach a pressure, because I know they are going to throw everything at us, but we know we are going to go through.
Basena earned a 1-0 home victory over Egypt in the third round of the group stage at the Nelson Mandela National Stadium on Thursday to take the Group E top spot, with the Pharaohs dropping to the second place. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, September the 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryok, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day, Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.